Hey everyone, welcome back to The Coop with Meyer Hatchery, where we talk all things poultry in hopes of educating chicken keepers and inspiring future flock owners. I'm Linda. Today we have a special guest, Angela Ferraro Fanning. She's joining us to talk about her writing and the Axenroot Homestead, her small permaculture homestead in New Jersey. Angela is the author of The Little Homesteader, a winter treasury of recipes, crafts, and wisdom. There are also spring, summer, and fall book titles to complete the series. Angela also wrote The Sustainable Homestead, Create a Thriving Permaculture Ecosystem with Your Garden, Animals, and Land, and co-authored The Harvest Table, a collection of seasonal, plant-based recipes inspired by the home garden from the kitchens of Axenroot Homestead and Azure Farm with Annette Thurman. Welcome, Angela, and thank you for joining us. We'd like to start by asking, how'd you become interested in sustainable farming and permaculture?
I've always been very interested in living a greener lifestyle. Before I was a farmer and a grower, I actually had an eco-friendly graphic design business. So living a sustainable lifestyle that is in alignment with nature has always been really important to me. It only made sense that when I got into growing my own food and raising animals and then ultimately creating a permaculture farm, that I would carry those values through to those endeavors. And so permaculture and sustainable farming just seems like the obvious fit for me.
We love hearing how people got started. Having said that, what would you like to tell us about yourself and your farm?
I did not grow up on a farm. I actually am completely self-taught. I've always been an avid ornamental gardener. But segueing into growing produce was something that I heavily became invested in about 10, 12, maybe even 13 years ago. From there, it snowballed into growing as much of my own food as possible, tapping trees for syrup, keeping bees for honey. But now I become a permaculture farmer, which means that everything that I incorporate contributes to the greater whole. So I don't really focus on bees for honey. Now I'm keeping them for their pollination contribution alongside attracting native pollinators to try to increase the yields by pollinating all of our plants. I keep ducks because we live in a wet climate. And so I want waterfowl to help assist with eradicating our snails and slugs, pill bugs, and other pests that infect our growing spaces. We keep geese to act as alarm calls for those ducks. So if they see hawks or something in the sky or, you know, an intruder of some type, they sound their alarm. We also keep them as weeders to help in our growing spaces, and they help to eat weeds that our sheep and our horses don't eat in our pastures. We have a livestock guardian dog that protects all of the birds so they can free range and forage 24/7. We have draft horses to help with manure, and then to ride, and then we have them for plowing or pulling services. And then I have sheep, and the sheep help to keep the horses healthy. And the way that the sheep and the horses do that together is most people don't realize that livestock parasites are host specific. So when the sheep graze, they are eating different parts of forage that the horses don't necessarily eat. And they're also ingesting parasitic eggs and larvae that would ultimately want to infect a horse. But since the sheep is ingesting them and that's not the desired host, they die. And so that protects our horses from those parasites. And then in exchange, the horses actually do the exact same thing. They disrupt the parasitic lifestyle of the parasites that would infect the sheep. So we have this closed loop rotational grazing system. So nothing that comes here to the farm is here because it's cute or cuddly. Granted, they all are, but they all perform a certain service or a function. This is a historic homestead. It was established in 1775 in central New Jersey. I took it over about 8 or 9 years ago, and it is entirely based on permaculture practices since then.
You certainly have a lot going on to keep you busy on the farm. With all that you're doing, why did you decide to write the Little Homesteader books?
I had posted a lot of family-friendly homesteading content on my Instagram feed for my farm, Axenroot Homestead. And as a result, a publisher actually reached out to me and said that they thought that I would be a good fit for creating a seasonal series, one book to reflect each season, that would help families, whether they live in an apartment, high rise in the middle of a major metropolitan area, or whether they have 1,000 acres and a ton of animals. It would help these families to get into a seasonal living mindset. And as a permaculture farmer and homesteader, I am hugely dependent on weather patterns. And so the way that I eat, the way that my day is scheduled, the care and the chores of how I'm taking, you know, what, the routines I go through to take care of my animals, everything is seasonal based. And so they really wanted me to take these ideas and put them into a book that would be attractive to people, regardless of where or how they live. And so I wanted to create something that was engaging for adults. They could learn something that was also illustrated and that would be really eye-catching and fun for children to participate in.
I'm glad they approached you to write the book. Thank you for writing it and sharing your passion with upcoming generations, no matter where they might be. What else are you hoping to teach our youth from your books?
I think a lot of people think that in order to live closer to the land, you have to have a ton of land. And I think it's really important, especially for younger generations, to know where their food comes from and to have some sort of a connection with that or to land, regardless of their physical dwelling. So somebody in an apartment high rise could still go to a U-Pick farm, collect strawberries, for example, and go home and make jam and know that that jam, those strawberries were produced in the late spring or early summer, you know, depending on your climate or where you live or your growing zone, and then have the hands-on experience of turning that fruit that was harvested with their own hands from the ground into something that they can eat and preserve and that can ultimately be put on their table. I want to make these connections between food coming out of the ground, the process of harvesting and preparing or preserving, and then ultimately consumption. I think that there is so much gratification, pride, and a sense of accomplishment that comes through all of those steps. And I think you can even take it a step further by encouraging children to grow something simple in a windowsill. Everybody has access to sunlight, regardless of whether it's a balcony, a window, or a full-size garden, a rental garden or community garden. It's easy to plant a seed in a pot and grow it, water it, tend to it, care for it, and reap the fruits of your labor through harvesting a tomato, or even if it's just a bouquet of flowers. So I want children to understand those feelings, those senses of accomplishment, because they really, really get invested in those plants. It's pretty amazing. My kids won't eat blueberries from the grocery store. They eat blueberries from the garden when they're in season. So maybe I'm raising food snobs, but really I just love how enthusiastic they are about homegrown produce.
I love that you are gearing this information for anyone in any environment and allowing for realistic accomplishments so anyone can pick a place to start understanding and connecting to their food. It says a lot that your children can differentiate between the homegrown and grocery store blueberries. Your homestead must be producing beautiful, tasty fruit. Building on that, if there is any one lesson to learn, which do you think is the most important?
I think it's important for children and adults to recognize that they do not need to have a certain type of dwelling or a certain amount of land in order to have access to fresh food. Homegrown food can easily be grown vertically on a balcony. There are cities that allow balcony beehives. Urban areas, there are metropolitan areas, cities that are starting to allow chickens in backyards, even goats in some places in backyards. And if you don't have the time or the resources to be able to bring in or grow a potted tomato or keep bees or have chickens or ducks or have a goat, you can support community-supported agriculture. You can buy subscription-based boxes of produce, something that's local to your area, completely seasonal, that you can plan your family's weekly meals around. You can go to a local farmer's market. I don't think whether you live in a city or whether you live in the country should determine whether or not you have access to fresh food. It's more about seeking it out and finding the avenue to get that, whether that be growing it yourself in your own backyard or relying on another farmer to do so. And instead of going to a grocery store, getting it from directly from the farmer through a CSA or a farmer's market.
I would completely agree. Fresh food for anyone anywhere is very important. I think you mentioned some perfect steps toward a better connection with food regardless of one's location. I'd like to continue on with the Little Homesteader books. Which is your favorite and why?
I think for me personally, the spring title is probably my favorite because one, spring, I think, is full of promise and so many fun activities. It's a busy season on the homestead, but the kids are excited because we've got new life. We've got new ducklings or goslings. We're starting to plant our seeds. We're planting our garden. And I think it's just really exciting season, especially one to ask and allow kids to get involved in. It really is something the whole family can take part in. You know, I think there's an activity in there about the right way to give ducklings a bath. And the idea behind that isn't that everybody is going to have ducklings at home, but it's, okay, if we did, this is how we would do it. And look how fun this is. We're engaging with them. We're having hands-on experience with the children, with these ducks. We're holding them carefully. We're making sure they stay warm. They're only in the water for this long. We're giving them a treat. And I think it's just such a fun title. It's just such an enjoyable and uplifting and hopeful time of year.
I'd have to agree. I love the hopefulness that comes in the springtime, the longer days, pleasant temperatures, the smell of soil ready for seed. It really makes me look forward to all that will come from the garden or markets in the summer, and of course, plenty of fresh eggs. So please tell us how poultry helps your homestead
earlier,
to be a sustainable or regenerative farm.
More detail here. So as a permaculture farm, every animal and plant that comes here has to offer stacked functions, meaning it has to provide more than one service. So to a lot of people, it might look like I just have a bunch of cute ducks for eggs. And while that certainly is a perk, I myself actually don't eat eggs. I donate them to the food pantry or we sell them at the farm stand. The reason I have ducks is because I live in a wet climate, number one, and so waterfowl are very conducive and hardy to cold, wet climates. I live in central New Jersey along the Atlantic coast, so we're definitely considered a humid, wet location, and we have winters, so I need something that's going to be hardy to that. I don't want to be going out and rubbing Vaseline on wattles or worrying about that, so the ducks are very hardy. But number two, when we live in a wet climate, we have to look at a lot of the pests that infect our growing spaces. Snails, slugs, pill bugs, worms. And so while each of these things might offer a certain function in a growing space, waterfowl, such as ducks, are going to be their natural predator. And so it makes sense to have them here. The other thing is we can sell them as ducklings. We can hatch their eggs. I'm passionate about trying to revive some of the endangered breeds that are on the livestock conservancy list. So we have Anconas, for example, we have magpies, and we try to help increase their numbers by hatching their eggs. We keep them in our incubators, and then we can sell those ducklings and create a little bit of money for the homestead. So they perform a lot of tasks when it comes to the farm. The other thing they do is at the end of the season, the growing season, when everything has kind of died back and I'm not really growing anything outdoors, they're a great cleanup crew. So their job is to do sanitation. They go into the garden. They eat all of the fallen produce. They are leaving their droppings as they go when they're fertilizing. And so because I don't use a coop, we have a livestock guardian dog and I keep them outdoors. They have the option to use a three-sided shelter, but they're outdoors 24/7 with a livestock guardian dog protection. I don't have bedding that I would compost and then put on the garden. So allowing them to have direct access means that's how I get the fertilization from the birds. So the ducks do a lot in the way of the garden. As for the geese, I mentioned before how they act as alarms. So a geese isn't physically fit to take on a coyote or a fox, for example. I'm not using their physical stature to try to deter a predator. What I'm using is their call. So if they see a hawk, if they see an intruder that they don't like, they'll sound their alarm. It alerts the other birds. They can go hide, but it also alerts my livestock guardian dog. So we have like a multi-tiered security system when it comes to the safety of the ducks. The geese go through our pasture spaces and they graze plants that are left over from the sheep and the horses. So now everything is being evenly mowed. They also go around fence posts. They go into the lawn and they take care of grass and weeds. And so they're eradicating that for me. And then they go into my garden spaces and they actually, I have video, I have pictures of them leaving my kale alone and instead eating the crabgrass that's growing next to it. So I think there's a lot to be said for preferred forage. When having animals do these functions, they're returning nutrients to the soil. And this is sort of the way that nature intended it to be. In order to have healthy soil, you need to have a bunch of different efforts in place, like cover crops and erosion control. But you also just really need to have animals. Animals are definitely a very important part of the soil nutrient life cycle. And so our geese and our ducks are a wonderful way to make sure we maintain that. And then lastly, we have the guineas. I brought in the guineas because they specifically seek out ticks. After myself and my dogs came down with Lyme's disease, we had already had the ducks for several years. I needed something that was going to look specifically for ticks and eradicate them. And we have seen maybe one or two ticks in the year and a half that they've been here. So the guineas certainly keep everybody safe and healthy by removing our tick population.
It sounds like the poultry, sheep, horses, and dog provide you with a hardworking team for your homestead. Pest control, fertilizing, weeding, cleaning up, and even helping each other with predator protection. So with this hardworking crew, what are your favorite types of poultry to raise and why did you choose them?
I talked before about how we live in a wet climate and why ducks are conducive to our wet climate with winters. But they really are my favorite, specifically the white layer ducks. The white layer ducks are, well, they're just really cute, first of all. But the white layer ducks are very, very good layers, as their name implies. They I have found, are pretty good foragers, and they do a good job in our growing spaces of eradicating pests. But they provide the reliability that the pekin duck does of laying eggs, a high egg count, without a lot of the hip and the bumblefoot issues that I have found that the pekins have. So we are a vegetarian farm. None of our animals are processed for meat. If I was processing the ducks for meat, I probably wouldn't see those hip problems that I see in the pekins or the bumblefoot because I would be processing them before they were, you know, a year or two old. But because the birds that are brought in here are lifers, they're going to really use their joints for quite a lot of years. And so as a result of that, you know, we see the pekins with a lot of bubble foot. And I think I've had one or two with some hip dislocation issues that they've had to go into the vet for. The white layers just don't have that. And so because they're smaller and more nimble, you know, they give us our egg count that we need without running into some of those more physical issues you would see with the larger duck breeds. We also really love the magpies and the anconas. They're very, very friendly, excellent foragers. They're so cute with all of their unique individualized black little markings and spots that they have. The blue eggs are stunning. So those are some of my favorite breeds on the farm.
Thank you for sharing those insights and your favorites with us. I love my white layers too, and their eggs. As we approach the end of our time together, would you like to tell our listeners anything about the Sustainable Homestead or the Harvest Table Cookbook?
So I wrote the Harvest Table Cookbook with a co-author, and we both eat plant-based, primarily homegrown food as much as possible. And so we wanted to create a cookbook that was based on food you could eat all year long, from either food fresh from the garden or something that's been preserved from the garden in the colder months. So that's called The Harvest Table. The Sustainable Homestead is my passion project. The Sustainable Homestead is the resource that I wish I would have had when I got into permaculture farming. Originally, I thought it was just called, I dubbed it holistic homesteading. I didn't know that it was called permaculture. And so imagine when I learned that there's this permaculture movement that's been around for decades, and cultures have been practicing it around the world for centuries. It was something that opened up an entire window of resources for me. And so this is sort of taking all of the research, you know, the articles that I poured myself over, the books, the the videos, the everything. I put it all from getting your homestead, assessing your site to, okay, let's improve and manage the soil to growing food, bringing in animals, what animals are appropriate, what breeds of those species are appropriate, how do we create a sustainable pasture system, and then talking about composting and the orchard and you know, the future of the farm, because that's what kind of really what permaculture is about. We're here now in this moment, but we want this land to be sustaining over a long period of time so that the people that come in after us can benefit from it and the work that we've done. So I talk about capturing and storing energy and all of the fundamentals of permaculture that were instilled by its founders. And I kind of put this together in a resource book that was a series of steps and also diagrams and illustrations that I created as I went, you know, as I created the farm, in hopes that I could create a resource that would help someone else.
Holistic homesteading sounds like a beautiful way to farm. I love that you're concerned about the land still being able to sustain those who come behind you. That's a terrific gift to give to future generations. It sounds like the sustainable homestead is a valuable resource to help learn about permaculture. Finally, before you go, are there any plans you can share with us about upcoming writing projects?
I definitely would like to write another book. I have been waffling on the topic. I did take a year off. I had written The Sustainable Homestead, The Harvest Table Cookbook, and the Four Little Homesteader series books all in the span of 2 years. And it was a lot. I took off 2023 so that I could get my certification in permaculture through Cornell University. And now that I have that under my belt, I think I'm ready to create or write another piece. I'm not quite sure what that is yet and how I want all of the different pieces that I'm mulling around. I'm not sure how I want that to fit together, but there will absolutely be another book at some point.
I'm very happy to know you would like to write another book. I'll be on the lookout for it. Thank you so much for sharing your passion and plans with us. Angela, we appreciate you being with us on The Coop today. Thank you. And with that, I thank you for listening to The Coop. Be sure to subscribe. And if you would be so kind, drop us a review. Did you know that you can save $5 off your next Meyer Hatchery purchase of $50 or more? Enter the coupon code, THECOOP, that's THECOOP, at checkout. We'd love to hear your thoughts and want to know if you have any ideas or topics you'd like us to talk about on The Coop. Please send an email to podcast@meyerhatchery.com. We're looking forward to hearing from you. And remember, life is good because we have chickens and ducks and geese.